Hello, and welcome to my podcast, Sex, Love, and Addiction. This show was created to provide accurate expert information and support for those seeking insight into the painful realities of cheating and infidelity, sex and porn addiction, as well as the relationship between chronic drug abuse and paired sexual behavior, commonly known as chemsex. I'm your host, Dr. Rob Weiss, a licensed therapist, addiction specialist, sexologist, clinical educator, and author of 10 books on intimacy, addiction, sexuality, and relationship health. This podcast is a forum for discussing sex, love, and addiction in frank, fact-based, informative ways. My primary goal is to bring you clear advice, opinions, and feedback from some of the world's most renowned experts in human sexuality, trauma, addiction, mental health, and relationship intimacy. This show is sponsored by Seeking Integrity treatment programs, which are also dedicated to providing expert-focused, highly specialized residential treatment for men struggling with sex, porn, and related addictions. You can learn more about Seeking Integrity and my work there at www.seekingintegrity.com. Now let's get started. Hey everybody, this is Dr. Rob Weiss talking to you from Sex, Love, and Addiction, which is our show really talking about the problems of compulsive and addictive sexuality and relationship, things that people don't talk about very much. I also wanted to tell you that the show is made possible by seekingintegrity.com, Seeking Integrity, and we have all kinds of free resources and information for you guys there, and videos and all kinds of stuff that you can get without being charged. I'm very interested in making it things available to you, even if you don't have the resources. So today, I consider it a blessing to have the opportunity to talk to two women who have been through the experience directly in their lives of marital betrayal, and not just an affair or somebody who went to a strip club as a part of a bachelor party, but who have dealt with a chronic, painful, completely unknown or mostly unknown issue that evolved in their lives in ways that really, I don't want to say ruined their lives, but certainly set the path of where they had thought they were headed in a whole different direction. And so Annie and Melissa, thank you so much for coming. I really, really appreciate it. And I had some questions that I wanted to start with. I'll probably ask the same ones of each of you. But I just want to start with you, Annie. And can you, well, I have a good question. Why in the world would you do this? Why in the world would you sit here and talk like about these things to a bunch of thousands of people that you don't know?
I can take that one for sure. I was thinking about it this morning, Dr. Rob. There, you know, in recovery and in 12-step, there's a saying, you have to give it away to keep it. And I have experienced recovery and healing and growth post-betrayal trauma. And I want to make sure that no woman goes through years of not having anyone to talk to like I did. And so I'm putting my voice out there to help others. Plain and simple.
And Melissa, it's a risk, right? I mean, putting out this information that somehow people will get to know your family or figure out who it is, or, you know, put yourself in a position of being embarrassed or humiliated. So I really respect that you're willing to do it. So Melissa, I assume that you're coming from a very similar place as Annie, which you want to take your very difficult experience and make it into something that might be useful to other women who can't really understand what they're going through and don't know what to do next.
I'm going to add on to what Annie said, is that not only do I want to give back, but when you first get into this, you see no hope. And it's important to show that there is some hope. There's some hope if you stay. There's some hope if you don't. There, that you can get through this. You'll be different, but you can get through this. And that is one of the messages that I think is important, because it's really hard to see or feel when you first find out about these infidelities and these lies and things that you thought you knew of your partner and you didn't really know who they are. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. I literally remember talking to my therapist and say, I don't see light at the end of the tunnel. And now I do, and there is, and that's the message that is really important.
When you say light at the end of the tunnel, and I want to hear a bit about your own story in a second, do you mean light at the end of the tunnel for you personally, or for the relationship, or for your partner, or who are you talking about?
All of it. I see, you know, light at the end of the tunnel first for me, that I can move on from this, that I can live, that I can still have a life and be a person and not be consumed by this, that if they work at it, they can become a different person. Also that I never thought that my family would come back together, where my family's back together. I never thought that my relationship could be different and better. So there is that, all of that is light and hope, that that is an important message to get out, especially if people new in this. It's very, very hard to see through that fog.
I do want to talk about this term that you mentioned, Alyssa, betrayal trauma, which I think is one that is unfamiliar to a lot of people. But it would be useful for you to talk about, maybe before we get into that, how you ended up with this problem. And I think it'd be helpful, and I won't ask you directly, kind of, you know, what is your age, more or less? How long had your relationship been? You know, did you have kids? Like, what was the life that hit you with a rock when all of this came up? What kind of life did you have?
So I thought, I have married 20 years, have two kids. When finding out they were teenagers, we had a good life. I thought, you know, marriages are hard. It wasn't perfect, but I thought that's the way it was. So I would say everything was good. Everything was good until it wasn't, until, you know, the curtain came down and I saw the true relationship and what was going on behind closed doors, I guess, or not my behind closed doors, his closed doors.
Can you talk a little bit about that without identifying yourself? And by the way, folks, if either one of these women decide they want to change their story a little bit, their age, you know, details, so that it is safe for them and their families, I want you to know that we've all agreed that the essence of what they're talking about is there, regardless of whether the actual details are not entirely accurate, in order to protect them. But Melissa, so that being said, what happened? You're going along, you're having your family, and I agree, marriage is not easy. Dating is easy, falling in love is easy. Marriage, not so much. But it's, you know, it's worth the roll of the dice on so many levels. So you thought you had a reasonably good marriage, imperfect like many people. And what exactly happened that made you realize this isn't what I thought it would be?
Well, initially, before I found out, we were doing couples therapy just to strengthen our relationship and deal with marriage, I guess. And then I got this innocuous email, I thought it was, about something that my husband was doing online. I confronted him and he gave me an answer that he went online on a dating app and someone was trying to extort money out of him or some cockamony thing or whatever. And from that day on, I had what we call a trickle truth for 3 months of information of finding out about how deep his addiction was. I found emails, I found money hidden, I found different things. And every time I found something, he was emphatic that was it. And it continued and it continued. So it was, I think it was in March I found out the first thing. And it finally blew up in May. And I kicked him out. I said, either you get help or we're done.
So let me stop you for a second. When you talk about trickle truth, and I don't know that everyone understands this term, the way I think about that is you find something out and you say to your spouse, you know, I found this out and what is going on? And they find a way to just sort of convince you that it's only what it was and you shouldn't take it too seriously. And you kind of begin to find a foundation for yourself. It's like, okay, this is what it was. I can begin to integrate this. And then you find out more. And so this little piece trickles in that now leaves you falling back into space, not knowing what's going to happen next. And addicts tend to tell only as much as they think you know, and no more, because they're trying to limit what we might call the damage. They're doing damage control. So when you talk about trickle truth, did the things you heard, were they worse and worse? And did you find them or did he tell you about them?
A little bit of both. He would tell me, or the therapist would say, you need to tell Melissa. And he would tell me a little bit. And I literally can remember me like smashing my hands together going, you were emphatic. That was it. Is that it? And he's like, that's it. That's it. I'm like, are you sure that's it? He's like, that's it. And then a week later, some more would come out. I think the final straw was I found the stuff. I started digging because I was believing him, and then I couldn't believe him anymore. And I had to do some detective work on my own. And that was probably the final, like, this is it. You need to do something or get out. Each time, like you said, it was painful, but I thought, okay, I trust this man. He's telling me this. Okay, that's it. And then the next time, I trust this man. And then it came to a head where I was like, I can't trust this man.
You know, a lot of folks think, oh, I shouldn't look, I shouldn't check, I shouldn't be a detective. They're going to come to explain it to me, whatever that is. And then you go through this experience you're talking about, which is truth changes and the truth changes. And I just want to say to all of you that I don't think it's unhealthy at this point to try to figure out what the heck is going on in my life and what has actually happened. And so I just want to support the idea that if you're looking through email, if you're looking at phone bills, if you're, you know, that at this point, it makes perfect sense. You know, you're falling out a window and you want to know what story you're on. So I just want to say to everybody, this is a very valid and understandable choice. Although I think the partners will come back and say, why did you look through my stuff? And how could you do that? And this was personal, and all those things that are meant to throw you off and make you feel like you're the crazy person. Was he with other women, as far as you know, or men, or was it purely online?
Both.
You found out first about the online stuff, and then how did you figure out that there was more? And by the way, Annie, I'm not leaving you out here, but I think it's good to hear a story straight through. But we know you're there, and we're gonna ask the same of you. So why don't you rev up for that? So how did it graduate from there's no contact with other people, which I do think for many folks is like, okay, this isn't what I wanted. This isn't what I want you to look at. I feel compared to, I could never be one of those people. Why are you looking at them when you say you care about me? All of those kinds of things. But the escalation from that to an actual person, that's devastating, right?
I just want to validate everybody. I think it's all devastating. I think betrayal is betrayal, whether it's online, it's with a person, financial, anything, any of these lies, anything that's kept secret from the relationship is betrayal. And I don't even know if it matters if it was with a person or not a person or money. It's all kept secrets and it's all painful.
When you talk about throwing him out, was there a series of things that happened before that? You had discussions, you asked him if there was more, you asked him to let go and really focus. I mean, what happened that you got to the point where you didn't throw him out on day one? So what changed?
Lies, the amount of information, I think me having to go and find the lies and find it without him telling me and saying, this is it. I can't do this anymore. You don't know how to tell the truth.
And was it your intention to end the relationship?
My intention was either he gets help or end the relationship. He had, I put a line in the sand and he said, this is your choice. And, you know, you can walk out or you can go get help. And I gave him that choice. And there were teenage kids involved too, screaming. And so it wasn't a hard decision. It wasn't like, you can stay here and deal with this. It wasn't that. It was either you get out, get help, or you get out and leave.
And it wasn't impulsive. It was thoughtful.
I think it was in the middle of the night, so it was probably a little impulsive. But I mean, I was strong in my convictions.
I want to move to Annie just for a minute and talk about this turn that Melissa brought out. And we'll go through your story as well. She mentioned this idea of betrayal trauma. And I don't think that's a word that most people know. And, you know, as a therapist, when I think about trauma, I think about someone who's been through an earthquake or someone whose mother died, you know, unexpectedly. To me, that, or that they were abused in childhood. When I think of trauma, I think of that kind of very identifiable, almost incident or series or experience over time that led to this destruction, if you will, of who that person thought they were and how it's going to affect their whole lives. Why do you call this trauma? What is this betrayal trauma thing?
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Rob. I didn't know the term until 2.5 years into this. So for me, discovering that term and hearing that other women had experienced what I was going through was so affirming to the experience I had. You know, they say trauma isn't the event, it's what happens to you after the event. And betrayal, like Melissa said, is in many forms and all devastating in relationship. And I can only speak for myself, when my world was shattered, my body took on the stress, my body took on the grief. I found myself in the fetal position in our closet at times, just, you know, like I was undergoing the traumatic effects of an event that happened.
Well, it's like a death.
It absolutely is like a death. It's a death of dreams. It's a death of what I thought my life was and turned out not to be. It is. It's very much. And all of us, I believe, do go through grief.
Did you tell anybody?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. Yes.
That's a qualified yes. I do want to say more
yes.
about that.
Yes. I'm just trying to think, like, the chronology of who was told. My husband insisted on D-Day that our kids needed to know. One was that my kids were adults. I didn't have teens at home. I had young 20-somethings, one living at home after college and one on his own. And my husband on D-Day insisted that they needed to know what was going on.
What is D-Day? I'm not sure everybody knows that term either.
Oh, thank you. D-Day is Discovery Day. D-Day is the day we discover that something indeed was going on. So the first tell was our kids, which was not something I would recommend anyone do at the beginning.
Why did you tell them?
That was my husband's decision. He, for some reason, wanted to tell them. You know, and I was in such shock. I had no mental abilities to discern that or to decide that. Or, you know, I'm laying there in a heap on the floor and he's saying we need to let the kids know. I think his primary reason was that one was living with us and he knew that she was going to overhear and see and know that things were not good. So I'm guessing that was the primary motivation.
Well, knowing addicts as I do, to me, it's the best defense is a good offense. And by taking the story and the narrative on himself, he then showed how honest he was being and how compassionate, how straightforward, and how glad he was that how grateful he was that the relationship was going to go forward because he showed the strength to be able to talk about it. So
I 100% agree with that, Dr. Rob. As I've healed, I've learned so much. And as I look back, I know that was manipulation of me.
And them.
And harmed them in ways that didn't need to happen.
Well, let's talk about that because I know that it's not unusual. And when you say the wrong reasons, you know, I will just say this one is that once you tell someone about this, you can't untell them. You can't take back the information that's happened. And I don't think many children of who have a dad, whatever their age, wants to know about their dad's sex life, wants to know about their parents' sex life, wants to look at a family that they loved as being completely dysfunctional on so many levels. It just isn't healthy. And I think, as Annie said, you know, to tell the kids they know something's wrong, to tell them we're struggling, we're having a really hard time, we wish things were better. Sure, validate the reality. But to tell them the details, I mean, Thanksgiving is never going to be the same. So he told the kids, who did you tell?
The first people I told was my employer, my boss, and another I thought trusted person at work. Because I knew my demeanor was going to be different. I knew I wasn't going to be as attentive to my work. I knew I was going to be distracted. I knew there might be days I wasn't even able to come to work. And I wanted them to know why. And I thought I had a very trusting relationship with these two people. I later found out I did not. The news was spread. They treated me differently. You name it. That was not who I needed to go to.
How much do you think you got she obviously didn't do what he needed and, you know, a woman needs to keep her spouse happy and kind of what is her part in this and how come you didn't see this? How could you not see this? all of those ways that other people put it on you. Did you experience some of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, decades ago, if women left their husbands, they were scorned. And in today's society, when we stay, people don't understand. And that was definitely at play there, for sure.
Why did you stay?
I had a lot of history with this man. I love him. I love our good history. I love all the reasons we got married in the first place. I love our family. I love our home. I knew the one thing I knew, and I'm glad I did, was that this was just part of him. This wasn't his whole being. This wasn't his whole life. In many, many ways, he was very good to me and still is. And I wanted to keep that. I wanted to preserve. I wanted what I thought I had and what I wanted from the beginning. And yeah, I just wanted to keep that history. We had been married when discovery happened, we'd been married almost 29 years. And I didn't want to throw that away.
I hear a lot of women say, in fact, this is a frequent issue that comes up in Seeking Integrity, our residential program, by the way, where we have guys there for 2 to 4 weeks in treatment. And I hear a lot of, from the spouses, how could you love me and do this at the same time? Did that ever come up?
I think that's the gist of why this
every day.
Yeah, this is why this is so painful. You know, this is a person, and it's why it's so hard to endure, because who is the person that I always went to for comfort? Who is the person that I knew would protect me from anything? Who is the person that stood before me and said, I am your person? And then suddenly I have this devastating event and behaviors, and now I feel like I don't have that, especially in the early days of recovery and healing.
So I want to get through briefly, because I want to go back to Melissa. You haven't really said what happened, you know, that you were going along one day and then, or you had suspicions, or what exactly happened that you feel comfortable talking about?
Sure. I knew for many years that something was off in our relationship. I could never put my finger on it. I just knew something was off. That's the way I always described it to myself. What is off here? And we spent years and years, couples therapy and marriage growth groups and, you know, just trying. And he was willing to do those things, but he never disclosed what the real issue was.
Well, he was superficially and to keep you happy, willing to do those things.
Exactly. And terrified of abandonment. So if I said, I think we need this, he'd say, okay, let's go, you know, and lo and behold, those things don't work when there's still an elephant in the room. So for about a year before Discovery Day, I had been in therapy for a few years for myself, for my own personal issues. I truly believe in therapy and you know, it's something that I've always done for myself. And when I started sharing with my therapist about something's not right, something's not right, something's just not right, we started working on me having the courage and a plan to confront him. And we actually worked on a script for months of what I would say. And he would have me come in and say it to him, to the therapist, so that I could get used to saying it. And I'd say, when will I know I'm supposed to do this? And he'd say, you'll know, you'll just know, you'll know. And so I had the script in my phone. And one day, sure enough, I knew it was the day. I can't explain it. I just took one look at my husband and said, we need to talk. Those dreaded words that every spouse does not want to hear. But I said, we need to talk.
I want to go back to for 1 second, because I think it's as a therapist, I think it's incredible violation for someone to go in and say, oh yeah, I want to work on this, our relationship. I want things to be more intimate. I want us to do better. And they're lying the whole way through, because things can never get better when there's such a big lie in the room. And to have paid for and invested in and spent so much time trying to heal a relationship only to find that that never could have happened, I hear as a violation to the therapist, to the whole thing.
Well, I agree. And part of his recovery and making amends is to all those people that he lied to. So for sure.
Did you ever get at all, what are you thinking? You're too suspicious. Maybe we need to look at your part from the past. Did you ever get any of that kind of, this is, you're in a way, and I don't mean this directly, maybe you're making it up.
I am very grateful I never did. I have a very sweet, kind, loving husband who really honestly, in the before discovery, never tried to pin anything on me.
Well, I'm the therapist. And by the way, I just want everyone to hear, everyone to hear that this woman who's been through this, who hasn't quite told us what it is, by the way, but we will get there, says, I have a sweet, kind, and loving husband. That is not what I expected to come out of your mouth, I've got to say. And I would say that most of the women in these circumstances are not thinking things like sweet, kind, and loving. They have other words for this, like inattentive, rude, violating, uncaring, I don't need to go through all the names. So we could talk endlessly about that piece, because I think Melissa touched very much on how, and you did, about how there's so much more to the relationship than this. And even though in the moment it feels like the only thing that matters, when you can take a step back and say, wait a minute, you know, we had kids together, we took vacations together, we have a home together, we have church together, and there's so much we share other than this. I heard a woman say once, you know, just because he screws up doesn't mean I'm going to throw my life under a bus. And I thought that was very wise of her to say that. Tell me, what happened to you?
When I confronted him, I also got a partial truth. I don't feel like I'm one of the women that got trickle, 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 trickle constantly. I got an initial, he was busted, and he blurted out what he felt would, you know, solve the issue. So I feel like I got a half truth, and it was devastating. It was not what I expected. I was blindsided by this being a sex issue, by this being betrayal in that regard.
So you never thought to yourself, oh, I'm not, you know, maybe my husband is cheating on me because of the things you mentioned before, that something wasn't right.
Well, to be clear, my husband wasn't cheating on me with another person. And I think we always think that with the word cheating. I didn't have those, where is he? What is he doing? Why is he not here? Why does that not match up? I didn't have any of that. Everything that took place, most of it took place here when I was out of the home and not with another human being, and or when he was on work trips, which he traveled a lot for work.
So you're talking about porn.
Yes.
And I have a comment about that. But porn is, and I don't know that many people know this, porn is not simply looking at an image. These days, it's often interacting with people, paying them to chat with you, getting something going where you feel cared about by this person. And I'm not saying that was your experience, but I want to say that to everyone. As you think they're looking at porn, there's often a lot more going on there than you think of as being porn. And I don't know, Annie, was that any of your experience? It may not be.
It wasn't. I think the biggest thing for him was the escalation from probably soft porn to very violent. He, you know, the next level up was, and ended up not being enough. And he would go, it would escalate to another level of porn. I didn't ever really want the details other than that. That's as much as I know.
Well, let me ask you, I want to say this, Annie, and then I want to go back to you, Melissa, actually the same question. So as a guy, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Okay. I'm going to take it from the side of the cheater, of the addict, or what, however you want to frame it. Hey, you know, Annie, I mean, yeah, what's the big deal? I mean, guys look at porn and it doesn't mean I left the relationship, and it does certainly, and I've never been with anyone else. And, you know, so what? So I look at porn occasionally. I mean, what is really the big deal? And why are you bugging me about it? How do you respond to that?
If that had been my experience, which it wasn't, I think I had enough knowledge to say it is a big deal because it's affecting me. It's made me think, what's wrong with me? It's made me wonder if I'm not a good enough wife. It's made me wonder if I'm not enough. You know, all the things that we women can kind of conjure up, like what's wrong with me? And those were things that I was going through. That's why I was in therapy. I was like constantly thinking, am I not getting this right? Am I not? Because yes, I said my husband was kind, loving, and caring. He was, but he was also not connected to me emotionally at all.
Melissa, you know, it's interesting when I do my consultations, and maybe you can give me some feedback about this, that the first question I ask of the women that I talk to, and I talk to men too, but mostly women, I ask them, do you feel like your relationship was missing something? Do you feel that there was a lack of intimacy? Do you feel like this person showed up and didn't really want to talk about things that were really going on with them emotionally? And when you tried to get them to, they would be angry, or why are you bothering me? Or I'm so busy with work. And it can even play out with kids. Like, they're superficially engaged with their children. It looks really good, you know, football and picking kids up and doing homework with them, but there's something missing with them too. And I wonder, do you get that? Like, that the sex isn't, that there was a whole series of things that led up to the infidelity?
Oh, 100%. But I couldn't put my finger on it. I think that you can't, until you find out what it is, then you go back and you say, oh my God, I couldn't put my finger on any of it. I remember just little things I would say, like, how come you could come home early and go out with your friends, but you can't come home early with me? And I get, what's the big deal? Well, it turns out he wasn't coming home early to events. He was doing something, you know, like, it turns out that it was a big deal, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I remember the only time I'd be able to have a conversation with my husband is when we got into bed, because I couldn't pin him down for anything. And I would, like, it could be just a talk about the kids. Like, that's where I talked to him. And was that normal? Probably not.
Well, you said earlier that you didn't know what a relationship was supposed to be. I mean, in the sense that this is my marriage and this is who we are, and I guess this is how it's supposed to be. And, you know, it's imperfect, but we love each other. So you already had that anticipation that maybe this distance was just what your marriage is going to be, or what a lot of marriages were going to be, or were.
Correct. What I did know is that the way he interacted with the kids was not normal. And I used to say to him these words. I used to say, if you continue acting the way you are, your kids are going to think you're an asshole, just like you think your dad is. And I would get the response, so you're saying I'm a bad father? And I wasn't saying that. I was saying that the actions were not good, or the interactions were not good. And he didn't see it. He sees it now. And he tries every single day to make amends, and doing living amends with the kids and having these, he's upset that he missed so much of their lives because of his addiction.
I'm glad you said that, because it's not unusual for the men I get do treatment with and Seeking Integrity, that the younger men with younger kids will say, and we'll talk about how they still can have a profound influence on how those children are raised and their interaction with their father and what they see in a mom and dad as a example of relationship, good or bad, right or wrong. And hopefully the men try to go in and fix it once they have more awareness. But the guy who has kids who are 22, he can't fix it. He can't go back, and they're not going to be 11 or 12. He can make amends. He can try to make it better. But they are who they are. They're adults, and they're going to struggle with whatever they struggle with. And I find that's very difficult for the men to look back and say, these kids are harmed and I can see it, and yet there's nothing I can do about it now.
I hope you're wrong in that way. I do have a child that's in this.
I'm never wrong. I'm the expert.
He's in it. He found out when he was still in high school, and now he's 20. And my husband is working very hard every day to strengthen that relationship. Yes, it's a long distance relationship, but I do see that things have changed. He went from not talking to him to now they text, they talk. I mean, it's changing. And I think he sees the work that he does, and things are different. I understand what you're saying. He's an adult and he has to go through his life, but at least he's seeing things differently.
Did your kids say, how could you do this to mom? Did they take a side?
Well, my kids know. When everything blew up, the final straw, it was in the middle of the night, and the younger one was yelling, how could you do this? Why are you lying? And the older one, who wasn't, he was still, I think he was 17 at the time, even kind of took it in his sense, saying, we can't throw daddy out. He's going to go do it again. Take all his equipment and we'll deal with it in the morning. Like, he was strong. And they know, like, I am happy they know. I'm not happy they found out. And I'm happy they know because I can now have conversations with them that I could never have before. I'm happy that they know because I don't want this addiction to follow them and I want them to understand it. I never even understood. I never even heard the word sex addiction. When things started to come to a head, I remember being with a friend and talking to her. And she said to me, maybe he's a sex addict. I'm like, what? A what? I didn't even understand it. And then I came home and I said, are you a sex addict? And he's like, I never thought about that. I think I'm a sex addict.
Was that helpful to find that out?
Probably for him. Helpful.
Well, to put a name on it, you know, when you're sick and you don't know what's wrong with you, it's scary. You know, in fact, in therapy, I find a lot of therapists don't want to tell their clients what's wrong. Although I don't know any other doctor or professional who doesn't say it. But I would imagine it's somewhat a relief to say, okay, I know what we're dealing with. I know what we need to go through. I know how we need to go forward. I've read every book. And
you could say that now. I could say that now. It was helpful. Looking back then, when you find out that your husband is a sex addict, is that helpful? It is traumatic. It is something that, can you talk about it? Who can you tell? What does this mean? Is he an offender? Is he doing things that is illegal? Like, there's so many things that go through your mind. It's not something you can say to your neighbor, my husband's an alcoholic. Like, you can do that. My husband's, what is everybody going to think? Are they going to be worried that they're around us? What? So is it helpful? I don't know if helpful is the right word. We put a label on it. Maybe it was helpful for therapy going forward. Maybe it was helpful to find the right treatment. It's a scary thing to find out. Really, really scary.
Yeah, I was going to say that in the finding out, one thing that happened was all attention went to him. All attention. Oh, he's a sex addict. Now we know how to treat him. Oh, this is what has to happen. And that's when I felt left in the dust. I kept saying, so he started with a CSAT almost immediately. And for months and months and months, I kept saying, what about me though? What about me? Isn't there help for me? Can't I get help? I really want to have some help here. And I wasn't being heard. I wasn't being seen as someone needing help in this. And I finally insisted that I go to one of his sessions. And he came home from a session after I said, you're going to ask him if I can come. You're going to tell him I'm coming. And I was granted, and I kid you not, I was granted 15 minutes of a session. And when I sat down, his therapist was arms over chest, feet kicked out. And he said, so why do you want to be here? So all attention on the addict. So was it helpful? Well, yeah, now I know what I'm dealing with. But in my experience, it meant that I felt shoved aside and disregarded and of course, yes. So second betrayal, there are many betrayals along the road in this. And so, yes, second time of being cast aside. And of course, you know, these guys can be really good at going, I'm doing all the work. I'm doing everything you wanted me to do. Why are you complaining? Why? You know, that's when I started to see that side of my husband.
That side meaning?
That defensiveness, that, you know, why are you trying to make me do more? Why are you asking for more when I'm doing everything? Pre-discovery, pre-knowing this was sex addiction, pre-knowing what was going on. I knew something, but I didn't know what. He didn't exhibit those outward defensive behaviors over things. Things were very dysfunctional. But we were so disconnected, there wasn't a lot of that. But post-discovery and him being in recovery and him seeing a CSAT and him going to a workshop thing and, you know, just all this stuff, that was his defense. I'm doing everything you're asking me to do.
defense against what? Will you just leave me alone? And why do you keep going after me? And, you know, what else am I supposed to do? And just really feeling controlled. You know, I don't know what went on in his mind, but I don't really understand. Why wouldn't he just say, you're right, I can see, you know, that no matter what I do, it's never going to be enough for you because of the amount of pain cost you, and I'm not going to be able to prove it to you. And why did he defend himself? Now, looking back, and Melissa, I assume you went through this too?
Mine was a little different. Because like we discussed before, I had this trickle truth that came to a head where I had never done this before, but I, in the middle of the night, crawled on my knees, went over and got his phone and started looking at things on his phone and found so much stuff that I woke him up and started screaming at him. And that's when the kids woke up, and that's when I gave him this choice. Either you need to go get help or get out. And my son was like, he can't leave. It's the middle of the night. And then we worked it out the next day. And I think 2 days later or the next day, he was off to inpatient. He decided to go to inpatient. We had been seeing a couples therapist at the time, which I discovered knew some of this betrayal, and it never came out.
Can I say something about that?
Yeah.
Because I really wanted therapists to hear this and all of you folks. It is completely unethical and inappropriate and violating. It is violating for me to be the couple's therapist and keep secrets from one partner or the other. And what a good couple's therapist says, you know, what you tell me, I'm going to tell your partner. Because we don't keep secrets, and we're open, and we're working, all three of us, on making this better. And I'm not going to be the one who is in the middle. And the reason I say that is because I think, Melissa, that's a further violation. This person that you trusted and they're looking out for both of you all of a sudden turned to you and said, well, there's a lot of things I don't know that you don't know, but I guess we should talk about them.
And Dr. Rob, literally, when we started this couples therapy, the therapist said, we have to be honest. You have to be truthful. And then he never made my husband come forward with the information. And I don't think he knew the full information, this therapist, but he knew he cheated on me. He knew it, and it never came out. And then once I found out, that was the end of him. And I spoke to him. I'm like, you just betrayed me. I had trust in you. I really enjoyed coming to you. I thought you were helpful. And everything fell apart because of him.
And money went with it. You know, and I want to say this again, just because someone has a license and they say that what they're doing, that doesn't mean that they do. And I think for the folks in these set of circumstances to say to a couple's therapist, well, what are you going to do when you find out things I don't know, is an essential question for the work, because he undermined or she undermined the very work that you were doing. And now you don't trust them, which is a real violation of your faith.
Hi, this is Dr. Rob again. Thank you for joining us today. If this show has inspired you to seek further information for yourself or someone you love, I encourage you to visit our treatment center website, which is www.seekingintegrity.com. There you'll find some useful information about the residential treatment we provide, which I think is some of the best, most useful short-term effective intensive care you can find for sexual addiction and compulsivity, as well as combined drug, sex, or chem sex problems. On seekingintegrity.com, you can find some useful advice and direction for healing. And don't forget, if you want to write me about this podcast or reach any of my guests, please write me at rob@seekingintegrity.com. I really look forward to our next time together. Take good care.